are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to CBD. Nathan Segura, Matt Wilhelm here in the Dog Bowl in Berea. We're going to go now to the Ohio Business Machines hotline. OBM, Ohio Business Machines, preferred copy provider of the Cleveland Browns. You know that every day is game day in your office. Call 216-485-2000 or visit ohiobusinessmachines.com. And we go to the hotline and bring in John Costco from Pro Football Focus, who is with us now. John, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me back, guys.
You got it. Let's start off with this game against Miami. In the eyes of Pro Football Focus, who are the best Browns on offense and defense?
Well, I think you have to start with Terrell Pryor. That was a type of performance you don't ever really see. He threw the ball decently well as a quarterback, but where he excelled was as a receiver. He topped, I think he was third in our grading for receivers at 144 yards on 12 targets, caught all 8 of the catchable balls that he was thrown. And he guided that team and led that team pretty much what should have been a victory. Gary Barnage did really well again. Last year he didn't perform well as a run blocker, and this year he's grading well as a run blocker. So I don't know if it was a scheme that was put him out of position as he was doing that, but he's, you know, in the power scheme, he's showing much better in that area. And then of course he had a couple of really nice catches, but the one-hand grab.
Yeah,
Joe Thomas, it was incredible. It should have been an incomplete pass, but he kept them in the field goal range there. But Joe Thomas, he gave up 2 hurries, but, you know, he did well in run blocking and pass blocking outside of that. And then Joel Bitonio, he's definitely back to his rookie form. Last year he struggled with those injuries and never showed what he showed as a rookie, and this year he's one of the top guards. He's ranking 4th or 5th in the NFL so far through 3 weeks. So those are the top performers on offense.
Who stood out on defense? Because it was a game, it seemed to me, the guys up front, especially Steven Pius, seemed to be in the backfield every single play.
Yeah, he was dominant. He only played 26 snaps, but he was disruptive. He had 3 pressures. He was forcing the cut, getting bull rushes in the run game. Even Emmanuel Ogba, it took him a couple of games to really kind of get the feel for live NFL regular season action. But he had a quarterback hit, 2 quarterback hurries, a batted pass, and he also beat Brandon Albert on 3 other occasions, but they weren't recorded as pressures because the ball came out too quickly. So he's showing his strength, and then you got Tyrone Holmes again, dominating in his limited number of snaps pass rushing. He had the hit on the arm that caused the interception that was returned for a touchdown by Breann "Body" Calhoun, who had he gave up the touchdown, but he had, you know, made up for it with that that pick 6. He also had a nice tackle on a pass play that prevented the first down. So he was a guy that thrown into the fire. You know, you're not expecting him to play 57 snaps, but he played well considering the situation. And Danny Shelton, again, he's continuing to dominate. He leads the NFL in run stop percentage among defensive tackles at 18.1. So just 18% of his run snaps, he's getting a tackle for a win for the defense, which is tops of, you know, it's beating the Ndamukong Suh, Aaron Donald, those guys. He's got the most of those.
And that's very impressive, John. And the question I love asking you each and every week as we look at the Cleveland Browns themselves, I also like to look ahead to their opponent. And, of course, the Washington Redskins had their victory over the New York Giants this week in a battle that came down to the end. Who are some of the top offensive and defensive players for the Washington Redskins in the eyes of Pro Football Focus?
Well, DeSean Jackson is a guy that performs well for them year in, year out. He's explosive. He's fast. He can catch the deep ball. He's quick underneath. And he's grading well so far. The offensive line is playing really well this year. They have, got Trent Williams, who's one of the best left tackles in the NFL. He doesn't give up anything in pass protection. He's strong in the run game. Even in right guard, Brandon Scherff is another guy who struggled in the beginning of last year, but then he really took off in the second half of the year and was graded as one of the top guards in the second half of last year. And he's really picked up from that, and he's grading as one of the best as well. And then you got Kirk Cousins, who he can, when he's not pressured, which the offensive line is doing a pretty good job so far this year, he's really good. It's when he gets pressured, his pass rating drops and his grade really struggles. On the defensive side, you know, that the best player over there is clearly Josh Norman.
Yep.
And whenever he's not facing Odell Beckham Jr., he grades as the best cornerback in the NFL. But whenever he faces Beckham, he struggles. He gave up, I think, six catches for 90 yards, five of them to Beckham for 88 yards. And he did have a pass defense, which was a dropped interception, but he does tend to struggle with him. But other than that, he's a shutdown elite corner in this league. Even when he went up against Antonio Brown in week one, he was targeted twice, gave up nothing to him, and he had there's that one play where it looked like it was a fumble, but they called it an incomplete, so they, you know, he got a pass defense for that instead of a stripped fumble. And then, you know, guys like Chris Baker, who's playing well so far for them this year on the defensive line. And then you've also got D'Angelo Hall, who might not be playing this week because of injury. So
done. I think Breland might be out. And they also lost their center, Corey Lichtsteiger, today. Put him on IR. So those some significant pieces will be out for the Skins.
Yeah, I just saw that the Redskins signed John Sullivan from the Vikings. I would say that's an upgrade if John Sullivan can get back to his 2014 form, because he graded as one of the best centers in the league then. Obviously, he had the back injury last year, so he didn't play and was cut by the Vikings because Joe Berger's emergence there. So I don't expect him actually to play, you know, at his elite form that he did in 2014 right off the bat in his first week, but he's still a very good player.
John, when you looked at the performance of Cody Kessler in this game, when you dive into your signature stats in terms of accuracy, you know, quarterback rating, et cetera, how did he fare in this game?
He was good. And, you know, something that I, you know, liked about him coming out of college and was his accuracy under pressure and his mobility in the pocket. And he showed all that in this game. You know, he didn't get rid of the ball at a super quick rate. He got rid of it at 2.5 seconds per throw, which is about average in the league. And he had a passer rating of 86.3, which is good when you don't throw a touchdown, but he also didn't have any interception worthy throws there. He had an average depth of target, which was about average in the NFL at 8.2. Last year, that would have tied him with like guys like Aaron Rodgers and Drew Brees. But his adjusted completion percentage, which is one of our signature stats of completions divided by attempts minus throwaways, batted passes, hit a thrown, spikes, stuff like that. And it also adds on drops because it's basically your completion percentage on aimed throws. He had a 77.8%, which was seventh best for the week. And if you consider the NFL average last year of 73.3, so he's well above average. It would have placed him fifth, just in front of a guy like, you know, Tom Brady, who was at 77.4% last year. This year so far, Carson Wentz ranks second in that category, but he has a much lower average depth of target. And especially this past weekend, he had a 5.1 average depth of target and took his adjusted completion percentage from 12th to 2nd in the NFL. Under pressure-wise, he was also very good. He was third best of the week with adjusted completion percentage at 83.3%. He was the most pressured quarterback in the NFL in week three. He had 20 dropbacks where he was under pressure, which was 55.6% of those dropbacks. The second most of the week was Cam Newton, who was pressured at 48.5%. He had three under pressure. He was sacked three times, had four throwaways, and one hit as thrown. So he was 10 of 12 on his aimed throws under pressure,
which is pretty good. So it's good to see. Young kid was cool under pressure. One question we got for you. You guys do overall grades on just general speaking, special teams performance for a team? And if so, where do the Browns rank in that?
In the special teams, they are 30th out of 32 teams. They have not graded very well so far this year. I'd say the culprits on that, I mean, obviously when you miss three field goals and a game-deciding field goal, that takes your grade way down. But, on the bright side of things, Britton Colquitt, he's grading really well as a punter so far. He's raking in the top 10 in the league and punting in our grading. He's getting good placement on the ball. This past week he was kicked it out of bounds on several occasions, or at least towards the sideline where it couldn't get returned. But where they're failing in the special teams category, they've had 7 missed tackles, so that hurts.
Yeah, they've given up some long returns. One area where they've surprised, I think, everybody is running the football. They've done a tremendous job running the football. That's not something that was expected. Isaiah Crowell, Duke Johnson, how have they done for you in your system in both the grades and the signature stats?
So going for the signature stats first, Isaiah Crowell, he and Duke Johnson both rank in the top 5 in yards per contact after yards per carry after contact. So Duke is at 4.06, and wow. Crowell is at 4.03, which is an insanely high rate. I don't expect that to maintain through the whole season, but it just shows the amount of production that they're able to get. Crowell, he ranks first in breakaway percentage, which is the number of percentage of runs that he has over 15 yards. He's had 5 over 15 yards and has gained 161 yards on those carries, which all those categories lead the NFL. Duke Johnson has an elusive rating of 116.1, which is ranked 3rd in the NFL. He's forced 8 missed tackles on just 28 touches. So just from the sheer production standpoint of what they're doing on a per snap basis, per carry basis, is pretty ridiculous, and it would be difficult actually to maintain that throughout the whole season. And you look at where they're getting their runs, they're excelling really well outside left tackle. You got Joe Thomas paved away, and outside left guard with Joel Batonio paving away. They've averaged outside of left guard 12.8 yards per carry.
Wow.
And outside left tackle 7 yards a carry. Austin Pastore has got a lot of, beef for his performance this past weekend, which is fair because he did give up a lot of sacks and hurries and had the penalties. But he's fared well in the run game. Outside of right tackle, they've averaged 6.7 yards per carry. So that's the reason why, Hugh Jackson's been defensive of him, because he does have good qualities about him. He's solid in the run game. He's not graded, an elite level in run blocking, but he's average, or better in run blocking. And in terms of the grades, if you look at what Isaiah Crowell has done, he ranks 10th overall so far. Duke Johnson hasn't carried the ball enough to get ranked in the run grades, but Crowell ranks 10th, and then in receiving, Duke ranks 5th. So their backs are doing really well, offensive line's doing really well for their run blocking. It's going well so far on offense.
All right, final one. John, I appreciate all the great information. What is the key matchup for the Browns in this game against the Redskins?
Well, you got to get pressure on Kirk Cousins. They've got to stop the run, which if you look at the first two games, the Redskins ran it a total of 29 times in 2 games and lost both games because they had the resort to the to the air game, and Cousins struggled trying to do that. And they also got down big against the Steelers, so that's understandable that they needed to try to throw to catch back up. But if you can stop the run, which the Browns have done very well this year against an offensive line that's pretty stout in the run game, then you're forcing Cousins to throw it, and you got to get pressure on him because his passer rating drops significantly. He grades is one of the worst when he's under pressure. So if you can get that, you know, guys get like Tyrone Holmes, and he gets in his opportunities, he continues to get pressure. If looks like Orchard is going to be out, so, you know, it's going to need to have Joe Schobert step up. You're going to need Corey Lemonnier to step up. Agba needs to continue what he's been doing. It'll be interesting to see if Nassib comes back this week from his broken hand. That would be pretty quick. But if those guys can get the pressure on Cousins, that's where the game can be won for the Browns.
Hopefully they will do that. And we'll be talking about the first victory next week. John, appreciate the time and the great information,
John,
as always.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Hopefully we can get the Browns can get a win this week and have more good things to talk about.
That's exactly right. That is the plan. All right, when we come back on CBD, we'll open up the phone lines, 216-578-0850. Again, 216-578-0850 if you want to call up and talk about your Brownies as we get ready for week number four already. Amazing. Week number four against the Washington Redskins. We'll also hear from Cody Kessler after further review, so lots to get to. Call us up, 216-578-0850.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to CBD. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm.
We opened the show with a wrestling theme. For the first 30 minutes, we have a wrestler, and now we have more wrestling music. Like, are you guys trying to, like, push something on me?
Yeah, man, get into it. We'll see you down at the queue tonight, Wilhelm.
The Miz didn't give me any passes. I'm not going.
216-578.
And to roll out the red carpet for me.
They do need that. That's part of the Free Willy experience,
yes,
folks. John Costco, some good stats on Cody Kessler. Under pressure, very good. He was under pressure more than any quarterback in the league, but stood tough and was accurate with the football,
yeah,
when under pressure.
And
that
Duke
is
Johnson's
a good sign.
Elusiveness ratio was extremely high.
You like that, 116. What does that mean?
0.4.
I don't know. But it,
tops in the league.
But it was good. It was good. It was good. 216-578-0850. I like that. That one, 8 missed tackles, though, on 28 touches is a lot.
Yeah.
And they're both averaging over 4 yards after initial contact. That was something that was a knock on Crow for a while, that he wasn't able to plow through that contact. I feel like he was running behind his pads so much better now. You remember 2 years ago, he'd often trip himself up.
Correct.
You're never seeing
he
that.
He was his forward body. He had so much forward
lean.
Body lean. Correct.
Yeah. Yeah. So what is that? Just something that the coaches have been worked on, and that's the benefit to Kirby Wilson. Really seems to have reached Crow, and Crow himself is putting the work to get better, and it's something beautiful to see there.
Oh, okay.
What was that?
What was that, Fontana?
Sorry, I had the computer up to maybe prepare Cody Kessler.
Do we have that test today, too, at 228?
We do, actually. It's coming up here in just a little bit.
So we can't play Kessler.
Well, we can, and then actually that'll work out very well because we're not sure exactly when it's going to start or when it's going to end.
Okay.
So Cody Kessler would be actually fine to play right now.
All right. So let's go to the podium and hear from the Browns' young quarterback.
Physically, how do you feel after the game?
Yeah, I feel fine. I mean, some bumps and bruises here and there, but that's just the nature of the game. But yeah, I felt great. A little sore this morning, but we came in and got a recovery and kind of got a flush going. So yeah, I feel a lot better.
How did it look when you saw it on film?
Yeah, I mean, like I said yesterday, you know, it's tough. It hurts to lose, and there's, you know, it hurts even more when you kind of leave some stuff out there and, you know, some plays that you wish, you know, would have worked here and there, you would have completed or executed. But at the same time, you know, our guys fought really hard, and they really did. You see it on the film, and it shows up over and over. Just the effort is there, the effort everyone's given. And I felt like, you know, we did a great job there as a team, you know, to rally back when we were down. And our defense did a great job of helping the offense out and get a chance to come back and make it a game in the fourth quarter. But like I said, you know, it hurts to lose. But at the same time, you know, you see things on film that you wish you would have done better. And you also see things on film that are, you know, really positive.
When you get pinned back like you did in the overtime, like at the 9-yard line, how difficult, it's loud, and, you know, you got a long way to go. How difficult is it to get out of that jail like that?
Yeah, it's tough. You know, it's football. It really is a field position game. You know, and you want to give your defense a chance. You know, to put their offense in bad field position, and that's what they did for us. And it was tough. You know, but at the same time, you just call the plays and execute them, whatever it may be. You know, you work on those situations. You work on, you know, backed up plays. You work on, you know, plays from the 50. You work on red zone. All these different scenarios. And you know, it would have been great to have a drive there, but at the same time, You know, we wanted to give our defense better field position. Unfortunately, we couldn't get too far out, but it's tough. It is tough, you know, to play a field position game.
They always say there's no teacher-like experience out there. Did you feel as the game was going along that it was, you know, slowing down a little bit for you?
Yeah. I mean, the first series obviously didn't go great and didn't go as well as I wanted to, but you just, the flow of the game, the first time being out there, I felt a lot more relaxed too, a lot more comfortable as the game went on. And, you know, it was good to have some big plays, to hit some big plays, to have some great runs, and had to complete some, you know, some good passes that you know, were some chunk plays. And it kind of relaxes you a little bit, makes you feel a little more comfortable when you get in a rhythm. But yeah, I mean, I think that just comes with experience. The more you get, you know, plays, the more you get reps, you know, the more adjusted you get to it.
What is getting that under your belt do for your confidence?
That's what, I'm sorry, what?
What is getting that under your belt do for your confidence?
Yeah. I mean, you always say the first one's out of the way. You know, the first one is always, it's a new experience. You know, for me, it was the first time being a starter in the NFL. And you know, I went in there and wanted to compete and wanted to play hard. And if things, you know, didn't go good right away, I wanted to continue to just kind of keep working, you know, and just keep, you know, fighting through adversity and everything that came with that. But it was good because the supporting cast around me, you know, Terrell and the offensive line and Duke and Crow and, you know, Hawk, the guys around me, you know, really, really believed in me all week. And after that first series, you know, they came over and kind of said, hey, let's go. You know, the first one's out of the way, let's go. You know, you got that out of the way and let's keep rolling. And it was just really good to have that confidence from the rest of the offense.
Was Terrell's overall performance even more impressive when you went back and watched that film today?
Yeah, Terrell did a great job. I mean, he really, and it's cool because, you know, he really does care about this team. You know, and the rest of the guys do too. But for him to have so much on his plate and do so many different things and to help me out, you know, throughout the week is he's just a great team player. You know, he's a guy that really cares about this team. And that's how the team feels. Everyone, you know, really plays for each other. And you kind of felt that out there on Sunday. But, yeah, I mean, he did a great job. His performance on Sunday was very, you know, impressive.
The, you know, popping in and out a couple of times the way you did with, you know, 12 going on and that. Is it, you know, disruptive to you or any type of, like, rhythm or flow?
No. I mean, I think we had a great game plan. And we worked on it all week and we got the rhythm down all week and how it worked. And, you know, my job in there is that if I'm in, you know, to execute the plays that are called, and if I come out, just stay in tune and get ready to go back in. And I think that package, you know, really worked for us. Terrell did a great job at, and it's tough, you know, he learned it all week and did different things, and he went out there and executed it great. And, you know, I think that really gave us some different looks at the defense, you know, hasn't seen yet, and I think it really worked to our advantage.
Hey, Cody, how is Coach Jackson kind of balanced? You know, obviously everybody wants to win, but then also keeping your guys' spirits up because it's a young team, because you've shown progress.
He's been great. He's really, you know, been in tune with this team and with me and with the young guys and the players around us too do a great job. The older guys, you know, they take time and help the rookies. Like I said, my room, the quarterback room with Josh and Robert, I mean, they take time to help me out, and they were my biggest supporters on Sunday. They helped me out so much. But yeah, I mean, you just have that will to want to win, you know, and that's how this team is. And the guys fight so hard for it, you know, and unfortunately we came up a little bit short on Sunday, but you could tell, you know, it hurt. And a lot of guys were hurt, and that's how it's supposed to feel. You know, it's supposed to hurt. And our guys do a great job. Coach Jackson is just one of the best leaders I've been around, and he does a great job of getting these guys going each week. And I think a lot of that shows to this team also. These guys want to win, and everyone just keeps working hard.
That was Cody Kessler there, the Browns quarterback, who will start again on Sunday, according to head coach Hugh Jackson. When we come back, we'll do a little after further review. Open up phone lines as well, 216-578-0850 here on
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Visit Wayside Furniture in Akron and enter to win 6 luxury Loge seats and a new Flex Steel furniture. Details at wayside-furniture.com. Nathan Zgura, Matt Wilhelm with you here on CBD. Let's go to the phone lines right now. 216-578-0850. Is Rich in Iowa?
Hi, guys. How
Idaho.
You doing?
Idaho. Rich, how are you?
I'm doing good. I first got to compliment you guys on just an awesome show. Been listening for a couple of years, and the content and entertainment, the whole pack of Miz this morning, you know, fantastic stuff.
Thank you, man.
Great, thanks.
At the end of the game, we just did a great, fantastic drive to tie the game. And the first play, Jordan Poirier basically breaks up a pass. Well, to me, it looked like a fumble on Jarvis Landry across the middle on that first play. And it looked like Hugh Jackson was going to challenge the call. What did you guys think of that play? Did you think it was a fumble, a catch and fumble, or was it an incompletion? And why didn't he challenge?
Yeah, on the field, I thought that it was definitely just an incompletion. You're talking about with 3 minutes and 14 seconds to go, it was first and 10 at the Miami 25, the incomplete pass to Landry over the middle. He didn't – the rule is you got to catch it, take two steps, and make a football move. It was kind of bang, bang. I don't think he really ever had it, and Poirier knocked it out there. So I think that they were thinking right there, hey, let's not – we'd already used one timeout at that point. Let's not use timeout number two on a challenge if we're wrong. And I think it was clear that that wasn't the case, that it wasn't a fumble.
Okay, so he's got to come down with both feet.
So they got to catch it. You take two steps. Like, there was a perfect one last night in the Saints-Falcons game where they highlighted it, and it turned out that it was, in fact, a fumble because he took two steps, moved with the ball. So, yeah, that's what you're looking for. It's a football move, catch it, and make a football move with the ball. That's kind of the rule. It's tough to know what's a catch, and this stuff happens so bang, bang quick. But that one, it looked like he never really had his hands totally around that ball, and Poirier was able to knock it down. So that was good.
Yeah.
Good defense there by the
Browns.
Great defense. Certainly at the end of the game, they did a great job.
And Jordan Poirier did finally make some of the plays that we thought we'd get a little bit more consistently from him in game three of this season. Because, he's played more football than I think people realize, with starting those games for Tashaun Gibson. And then, as you mentioned, continually last year, instead of bringing in an extra corner in situations, we'd bring in an extra safety. And I think that a lot of that had to do maybe some of the, uncertainty about Justin Gilbert on what Justin Gilbert you would get. So you figured you'd go with a little bit safer bet in Jordan Poirier. And I thought, very productive, 12 tackles, 8 assists?
12 tackles, 10 tackles, 2 assists, so total 12 on the day. He also had a special teams assisted tackle as well. He had a pass defensed that was referenced right there. So I thought a good game from Jordan Poirier, and you need that from him, especially with Kindred back there. That guy, he's kind of your veteran.
Oh, veteran.
And he's been, for the guys that were on the field at the end of that game, Jamar Taylor, 3 games with the Browns. Brian Boddy Calhoun, first game with the Browns. Howard has been with the Browns 3 games, but really that was only the second game they really played at all. Kindred, 3rd game with the Browns, and then you had Jordan Poirier. That was our secondary.
Yeah, but even furthermore, just look at the front. I mean, Jordan Poirier was the longest tenured Cleveland Brown on the football field, was he not?
Yeah.
I mean, you think of Shelton, Cooper, Kirksey.
Paya.
DeMario Davis.
Holmes, Lemonnier. Yeah, by far.
By seasons.
By seasons, yeah, because Tremont was out, and he's been here longer than Tremont, too.
Right.
I mean, Tremont's only in his second season. So, yes, by a lot. He is the holdover, the stalwart, as it were, of the Browns' defense. Let's bring in our producer now, Matt Fontana. Fontana.
Gentlemen.
How are you doing?
Oh, I'm fantastic. We've had quite a WWE day, so we had the Uso brothers on. You guys obviously had the Miz.
The Uso brothers have become bad people.
I heard that.
My kids are like, we don't like the Usos anymore. They're bad sports. After they lost a match, they attacked the people that beat them and injured one of their knees.
I will say they were nice guys in the studio with us, but then
great guys.
Yeah, also, and then the Golden Boys are they're gonna have Dolph Ziggler on, so it's a real WWE day here with SmackDown.
It is.
And
unfortunately,
awesome.
I hear on this show we get the champion.
Yeah, all we do is win.
Yes, we have the guy that defeated Dolph.
We have the champion.
Time,
multiple occasions,
and time
with the essence of a champion,
and time again,
all over the face of Dolph Ziggler.
That's right. Yes.
Unfortunately, we did not get a question in after further review about the WWE, but I do have 4 football questions for
you.
Okay. After further review,
much to the happiness of Matt Wilhelm. Number one, guys, fill in the blank. The Ravens are 3-0 and in first place of the AFC North because of blank.
Luck.
I was gonna say GFF, good fortune.
Yeah. And you said it already, I think, maybe in a break. Easy schedule, and they are probably, and this is not coming from a place of hating on the Ravens. I just don't think they're that good.
So who'd they beat in week 1?
Buffalo,
at home. Browns week 2, Jags week 3. So they beat 2 of the 0-3 teams in the NFL.
Correct, and the Bills are 1-2?
because they lost week one, they lost week two.
Right.
And then, yeah, 1-2.
But a resounding victory over the Cardinals.
That's what's been crazy about this season. Absolutely nuts.
Right.
I mean, what's going on with the Cardinals? They played two eggs. And then they were, and they've had one dominant performance. If they can't get well, if they can't come out and play a good game at home against the Rams, it's officially panic button time. What's going on with that offense? Where's Michael Floyd? Where's John Brown?
Right. I got Michael Floyd.
What's going on? Michael Floyd was a stud.
I got David Johnson too, though. So happy.
Well, he is a stud.
He is. Number two.
After further review,
which 0-3 team has the best chance to turn it around and make the playoffs?
None.
Not even the Saints?
No. Not in that division. Hang I don't
I'm
see
pulling
it.
Up the list.
I don't pull up the list. I know it's
the
Bears, Saints, Browns, Jags, and I think I'm missing one more.
That are the winless?
Yes.
Bears, Browns, Jags, Saints. That's it.
Okay, that's it. None of them are making the playoffs.
The Colts eked one out.
T.Y.
Hilton.
And very honest with you, the Jaguars, if they get it together with as many playmakers and as explosive both offensively and defensively as they look on paper, may have the best chance. But there is no way, regardless of who lays an egg, with the defense that I saw last night by the New Orleans Saints, that they can beat anybody.
They're not.
Even Drew Brees, with that golden arm, breaking the records that he's going to break over the next three seasons to probably be the all-time NFL passing leader. With that defense, they can't win more than 8 football games. And it's going to take more than 8-8 to get in the playoffs.
That is the only team. I agree with you. The Jags are the only team because the Texans are in first at 2-1. They're only a game out of second place right now with the Titans and the Colts. They're going to handle their division games.
Right.
And if they can do that, then you can make a little bit of a move. But in the NFC, you're talking about the Bears, no chance, no thank you. They're not leapfrogging the Packers and the Vikings, ain't happening. And the Saints are not leapfrogging. The Panthers are at 1-2 right now. They're going to find a way to come back and win that division. I think this Falcons team is clicking on offense right now, but they've done it before. We've seen Kyle Shanahan offenses dominate first half of the year, not be as good in the second half of the year. We'll see if they can keep it going, but they've been impressive so far. I think when you look at it in the NFC, I think you're going to get two teams out of the East. You're going to get two teams out of the North. So I think you have to win the South most likely to get in the playoffs and win the West to get into the playoffs.
After further review,
if you had to start one quarterback for a game Sunday, which one are you starting? Trevor Siemian, Carson Wentz, or Dak Prescott? Also, rank your choices of those three from number one to number
three.
What
kind of a question is this?
Did you write these or did Gibbs write these?
Did you write these?
You guys guess. Who do you think wrote those?
You.
No.
Gibbs.
Yeah.
So do I factor in who they're playing?
Yes.
Yeah, who are they playing?
Denver is at a Tampa Bay team that just gave up a boatload of points to Case Keenum.
Okay.
Dallas is taking on the 49ers.
And Carson Wentz isn't playing, so we'll take him out of the equation. So we'll go Dak Prescott against the 49ers or Trevor Siemian against the Bucs.
I'm going to take Trevor Siemian against the Bucs and then Dak Prescott against the Niners.
I'm going to put another quarterback in
there.
No. Yeah, we're good. Yeah, we're going to add one. Brock Osweiler versus the Titans. We'll do a first-year starter.
Against
I'm
the Titans?
I'm a fan of Brock Osweiler.
Brock Osweiler.
Neither
I'm going to take Dak Prescott against the Niners because after that miraculous first week, they are getting lit up.
The defense?
Yes.
Are they?
They are. They give up like 50. They gave up 50 to the Panthers in week two. And then, let's see. They lost 47, 26, 37, 18 the last 2 weeks. So I'm going to take the quarterback that's going against a team that's giving up, 41.5 points a game the last 2 weeks.
And still over 25 if you take all three into account, and that includes a goose egg.
That's right. These are the facts.
After further review.
27 a game.
Sorry.
Do we ever get Wilhelm's quarterback?
Yeah,
Wilhelm. Yeah, I did.
Yeah.
We are going to do the final one here, guys. Which team has been more disappointing? We talked about them already, the Jacksonville Jaguars or the Arizona Cardinals?
Jacksonville Jaguars, to me, were still a hype machine. It was unproven. It was how are all these pieces going to come in. Free agent superpowers often don't work in the National Football League. Remember that Eagles dream team. And I still am not a Blake Bortles believer. I thought the Arizona Cardinals were going to be the best team in the NFC this year, and they're 1-2, so the Arizona Cardinals are my answer.
I agree. I have to. It's Super Bowl or bust for the Arizona Cardinals. Even though they have you know, veteran quarterback, veteran wide receiver in Larry Fitzgerald, but the core of their offensive players, as you talked about, Brown and David Johnson and Michael Floyd, are all very, very young. But I think Bruce Arians, as you said, you lose this week, you get to start hitting the panic button. Something's got to change.
Gots to. But what's going to change? You're not taking out Carson Palmer.
No.
You're not changing. I mean, Bruce Arians is one of the best
But I think you're right. You don't necessarily hit the panic button, but you also have to take it with a grain of salt, knowing that in your division now, there you were supposed to be the power. Seattle hasn't looked like the Seattle of old. You know, the Rams are fluky. The Niners are fluky. So all you need to do is right your ship and go on a little run, and you could very easily run away with that division.
Yes.
That's for Seattle. That's for Seattle or Arizona.
Yeah, both of the. I mean, that division. It's a two-horse race. It should be between the Cardinals and the Seahawks. The Cardinals are struggling. Seahawks the big favorite to win that division. The Cardinals now, people are saying 42% chance. This is by the Sportsline projections. 42% chance of making the playoffs. If you're wondering about the Browns, if you're looking in the AFC of the winless teams we talked about, the Browns have a less than 1% chance, it says, to make the playoffs. It's the Jaguars 2.8% chance. They think the Browns will end up with, by the way, 3.4 wins, which is right around where I thought. The Jags 4.7. And then in the NFC, the winless teams over there, the Bears less than 1% chance to make the playoffs, 4.8 wins. So they're not looking so hot. And the Saints 6.7% chance to make the playoffs, 5.6 wins on the season for them.
So that would essentially mean that the Cleveland Browns, by their projections, would have the number one pick next year.
Yeah, right now people think it's kind of a 2-1. The Browns are at like 35-ish%. The next closest team's at 17%.
Which is the Bears?
Which is the Bears right now. Yep. Yep.
They're bad.
They are. That is not a good football team right now. All right, when we come back, it'll be our final thoughts. Last chance to chime in here on this Tuesday. Tomorrow we'll really turn the page and look forward to the Redskins on Wednesday. We'll get you ready. The players will be back in the building as they start their preparations as well here in Berea. Zagur and Wilhelm for CBD.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to CBD. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm here, wrapping it up in the Dog Bowl in Berea. Matt, today we'll kind of put our final thoughts on that Dolphins game. We'll move forward tomorrow and get ready for the Washington Redskins. So what was your, here as you're 2 days removed from it, your final takeaways about what they were able to do down in Miami and what they weren't able to do?
Sure. Obviously, they weren't able to finish. And that's the one lingering thought that I have in regards to the entire football game. But if you break the game down into small microcosms, They played a level of football that should allow you to win football games. And as I said time and time again, you get into that scenario in the fourth quarter, you know, you need to make consecutive plays. We made a play to give us a chance. And I think you need to continue to load that gun and put yourself in a scenario to be able to pull the trigger the next time. And that's the kicker. That's a reception. That's, you know, to score a touchdown and put you in a situation where you can, you know, kneel down for victory. Long story short, I think I love Crowell and Duke Johnson, the way they're being used and the way they're running the football right now. I love the creativity of Hugh Jackson. And all in all, I go into this week a little bit more secure and open-minded about the possibility of winning this football game, which I can say, we talked about how highly paid and the number of Pro Bowls, you know, on that Miami Dolphins football team and specifically the defense, and they were going to eat Cody Kessler alive. I don't feel that way anymore. I don't. And it has a lot to do with the performance that he put in and how level-headed he looked once he got comfortable in that football game.
Yeah, calm in the pocket, calm under pressure, face a lot of pressure. I just came away from it thinking that this coaching staff is the right coaching staff, and they're showing it on both sides of the ball and that they're doing a tremendous job. And I thought what Hugh Jackson's ability to motivate these guys and also the game plan he put in place was awesome. And I really want to see that come when, you know, Coleman comes back and Gordon comes back. They're coming, you know, Gordon's back one more game, and he's back. Let's see what this offense really can do. All right, that'll do it for us. Stay tuned for the Golden Boys. They will have Dolph Ziggler on the show as well today, so good fun wrestling theme. Then come out to the queue. I'll be down there tonight for SmackDown Live. Check it out. All right, that'll do it for us here on CBD. For Matt Fontana, Matt Wilhelm, thank John Costco and The Miz for joining us. And thank you for listening to Cleveland Browns Daily
on ESPN 850 WKNR.
You've been listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, a production of the Cleveland Browns and ESPN 850 WKNR.